If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N. Rakuten.com.
Buying a car in Carvana was so easy. I was able to finance it through them.
Whoa, wait, you mean finance?
Yeah, finance. Got pre-qualified for a Carvana auto loan, entered my terms, and shopped from thousands of great car options all within my budget.
That's cool that financing through Carvana was so easy.
Financed. Done. And I get to pick up my car from their Carvana vending machine tomorrow.
Financed.
Right, that's what I said.
You can spend time trying to pronounce financing, or you can actually finance and buy your car today on
Carvana.
Financing subject to credit approval. Additional terms and conditions may apply.
Again, fellow basement dwellers, this is your good friend Patrick O'Dowd welcoming you in to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. Bandwagon Nerds is, of course, brought to you as a part of the Chairshot Radio Network here on thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head.
Thechairshot.com, always use your head.
And nerds, I gotta tell you, sometimes we get prone to hyperbole in the world of podcasting. I do not think it's hyperbolic to say today that this may be the most important Bandwagon Nerds episode of David Ungar's life. Just saying, it might be a big deal. David Ungar, it's the Superman episode, man. It's the Superman episode. We are here today to talk James Gunn's triumphant, just a little spoiler alert, triumphant film, Superman. Big deal for you, my friend. Big deal.
It is. And, it's a big deal for comics in general. Big deal for the DC universe.
Don't spoil the whole segment. That's the end of the show.
I'm just saying.
Going to the conclusion. You're doing that Dave thing.
It's he's my favorite of all time. So I'm beyond thrilled with what I saw yesterday. So
we are also, of course, joined by the executive vice president of talent relations and Wednesday afternoon programming, PC Tunney. How you doing, sir?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm doing well. Yannick Sinner has triple match point here in the tenth game of the third set, up 5-4 against Carlos Alcaraz.
So
that's triple match point.
Match point.
He's up 40 love, up 5-4 in the fourth set, up two sets to one.
That is championship point.
It's triple championship point.
So both Wimbledon finals, not exactly barn burners. That's what I'm hearing here.
I mean, this one could still go to a fourth set. He just fought off the first one, so we got double championship point now. I kind of, not to get into sports, I should have jumped in at the end of Four Corners, which listen to that tomorrow. Yeah, sounds like you guys had a great conversation, but I don't know how Alcaraz, coming in on a winning streak and having won both the last two Wimbledons, was ranked second. But if Sinner wins here, I guess he, you know, solidifies. But my main thing is, why is Wimbledon able to not have any judges doing the lines, just using technology to better their sport?
He just won it.
Yep, there it is. And the MLB refuses to have computers call balls and strikes. It's ridiculous. It's utterly stupid. And I'll stop talking sports now. Sorry.
There's so much ridiculous with sports. And most of the show tomorrow, folks, get excited, is Patrick and Dave talking about the problems of Major League Baseball and then college sports, as both the NCAA basketball tournament and college football playoff are jokes as well. But we're spending most of the show today, nerds, and Ray Cash unfortunately cannot make it. He is watching Superman this afternoon. Most of the show today is going to be dedicated to talking about Superman. Hit this weekend. Everybody and their brother watched it, given the global box office numbers. I'm going to do my victory lap now. When I told everybody on this podcast who's fretting about how it was going to do, that it was going to do well. And it has done very well this weekend so far. Over $200 million globally. Number three, it's tracked to finish third biggest opening of the year. James Gunn did fine. So we're going to spend most of our podcast.
I was going to make a comment, but I was like, shit, we're going to talk about that all later. So sorry.
Right. So we're going to talk about some of the late breaking news and negative press that came out towards the opening weekend. We're going to talk about our thoughts. We're going to talk about possible spinoffs. That's been reported. And then we're going to talk as much as we want about this movie today. So if you did not see Superman this weekend, this is your warning at the beginning of the show that we will be spoilering aplenty at the back end of this show. So when we get done talking about George Lucas making his first ever appearance at San Diego Comic-Con, and you don't want to be spoiled by Superman or spoiled for Superman, just turn the show off, because the rest of the show is talking Superman. But before we get to any of that, we do have what I would say is the most hodgepodgey of hodgepodged trailer parks that I've done in a really long time. And then we are going to talk about that George Lucas San Diego Comic-Con news. To get to the trailer park, though, it's Dave's day. Dave, it's your day. You pick the trailer park intro music today. You pick the number 1 through 6, it looks like.
Got to get used to the new mute function. Tony, go with number 4 today. Let's go 4.
This is a good one. I'm jamming to it. I feel it. I like it a lot. All right. So, noble listener, fellow nerds, there are days when Patrick's working on the rundown. And most of the way the rundown works, we've pulled this curtain back before, is there is a bandwagon nerds chat thread that we run within Eli's or Elon's tax write-off, whatever, as Ray Cash would call it, the DMs, group DM, where I literally and the rest of the nerds just share stuff that we see that we think might be worth talking about on the show. And then I sift through that. I try to go through and pull out kind of what I think are some of the more interesting salient topics to cover. And this week was not a good week for news. And we also in this thread, we share trailers, and it was not a strong week for trailers particular either, at least in my opinion. And so that's when Patrick ends up in YouTube being like, oh well, these look like they might be interesting to chat about for 5 minutes or so. And here I am.
Did you guys have the Leo movie trailer in before Superman for you?
I forgot the name of it, and that's like why
another,
it's not on here.
Another battle or something like that. Did you have that before? So it's like 3 months old, actually.
The one where he's like running away from,
like he was in the
military. It's kind of like Benicio del Toro in it.
Yeah, he was in the military, and then he had a daughter, and then he raised her, and she did stuff with him, and then she gets kidnapped. Like, I saw that trailer and had forgotten about it from a couple months ago, which I think was just a teaser real quick. And that looked really good. I thought I'd just bring that up since we had a small trailer park. I'm sure a lot of people are going to go see a Leo and who else? Benicio were in that. I remember firmly. So as main characters.
That's like me. I'm also waiting patiently for a better trailer for Christopher Nolan's take on The Odyssey, which is, you know, as an English major growing up who loves Greek mythology, very much interested in a Matt Damon, John Bernthal led.
Bernthal's in one of the trailers that were before Superman 2 for one of the movies. I can't remember which one, but
Odyssey.
Was it the Odyssey?
Yeah.
He's sitting around a campfire with Peter Parker.
Yep.
Tom Holland.
Yeah, sorry, exactly.
My bad. I was like, the Punisher's talking. Punisher's talking to Peter Parker.
I do not remember this in the Odyssey at all.
Right. I know Christopher Nolan will make a good film, and I need to be patient and wait for a real trailer, because that trailer told us nothing, and I didn't really feel like that was worth the time of the trailer part.
This is supposed to be our next epic movie, correct?
Yes. And just seeing how he's going to film it and knowing what it's going to be one of those that you're going to want to see on a giant theater. Okay, he's going to film it entirely in IMAX.
Last quick note, news note. Did you guys hear about Woody Harrelson's dad's identity being revealed and what he actually did? Yeah. Like, Woody Harrelson's dad was like a contract killer, like real high up kind of guy, and did all this weird, crazy shit. Like, it just came out all of a sudden. I was like, no wonder he made Natural Born Killers, right?
Jesus Christ. Okay, let's jump into this. So the first trailer I came across, this is interesting. If you're trying to get your kids into something that's a little more mature / scary, I think the film Sketch, which is the first trailer we're going to talk about today, might be the one doing it. And the basic story here is a young girl who, for whatever reason, is basically she has really strange drawings that she uses to kind of deal with her her emotions, her feelings in this journal. And this book with all these strange drawings ends up thrown into like a magical pond, and the sketches come alive and start terrorizing people. It has a surprising, pretty solid cast. It's going to be hitting theaters in August 6th. It stars D'Arcy Carden, who many of you may remember from The Good Place. She's Janet. Tony Hale, a young girl named Allie McCulloch, and Q Lawrence, who I love as the little brother, who, as these kids are getting ready to like face off against these sketches and defeat them, they're all geared up, and he's just exasperated with the two girls that he's trying to be on his team. One of them has to use the bathroom, then the other one has to use the bathroom. He just wants to get going, and it's just not happening. This movie looks fun, cute, but also a little menacing, and something that I think could be good for a younger audience. Not necessarily something that I expect either Dave or Tony to like jump out of their way to see like at a theater. Not really their jam, but I thought it was a movie worth mentioning. And I like some of the people that are in this film. So it's, maybe one I see on a streamer, but it's rated PG-13, so it's also not quite just a little kid, or PG. It is PG, but it's not quite the fun, whimsy sort of thing. It does have some darker elements to it.
Yeah, you get that element of, not terror, but kind of like being frightened a little bit. I mean, I think the reason you can keep it PG and not have to go PG-13 is because the main character seems to be in control of her monsters, right? And it seems like kids are going to be unbelievably rooting for this main character, this little girl, who has this just wicked, awesome imagination and all these, it's an eider. Like, that was hilarious. That was awesome. Huge Tony Hale fan, by the way. So that's pretty cool. I think that'll be something for the adults to go, well, Tony Hale's in it. At least, you know, I can go check this out with the little one. It's funny you mentioned that Dave and I likely won't go see it in the theater, and you're right. And unfortunately, this is probably something that should be seen like in 3D. So
yeah, it just looks, the drawings of the characters look like right. On the screen, they look massive and huge and look pretty cool.
So it looks like a super fun story. Like I keep telling my sister, when her boys are old enough that I can firmly take them, you know, with me to a movie and they can, you know, tell me and use the facilities on their own, then I am more than happy to do so. This would likely be a movie we would do this for, but that day, those days have not come yet. But we're maybe a couple few years away, but they're coming soon where I'll be going to see more of these kind of movies with the boys. So
I love Tony putting all these rules and specifications on hanging out with his.
I am not changing a diaper and missing 30 minutes of a fucking movie because of a blowout, right? Like, maybe here's a new rule, Dave. We'll go even farther. When the older brother is old enough to take the younger brother to go pee during the movie and I don't have to get up, then maybe we're there.
You got to watch those O-ring blowouts, man. That's a bad time. I think a sketch, the first time I saw the trailer was for at Superman. And it's like you said, Pat, it's not exactly for me. I might end up going seeing it because, you know, my wife's got younger grandkids and this is definitely in their wheelhouse, you know, very imaginative children, stuff coming to life, you know, and the drawings and special effects and things like that. It looks fun, no doubt about it. It's just like, yeah, it's not anything I'm going to run out and see. So you called that one absolutely perfectly. So not my deal, but I appreciate it.
No, and I 100%, like, when I picked this trailer, you know, we do delve into things like fantasy, horror, sci-fi, stuff like that. And this definitely has a level of magic, whimsy, if you will. We can use the word whimsy to describe it. But I do think it'll be worth a look. I think it's a good one for families. And like I said, I think it's a good – so, like, it's the sort of thing that the little O'Dowd and I would have watched when he was starting to get into, like, I want to be scared a little bit or I want to be frightened. Like, that's – kind of his jam. The next trailer I have, so we had gotten a teaser for the second season of Twisted Metal on Peacock. We got our first full look at season two of Twisted Metal on Peacock this week. Anthony Mackie back. I can't remember the name of Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's back in her role. Also, very confusing for me, Dave, did you know that woman is also the voice of Mirabelle in Encanto?
No.
The woman who plays Rosa from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, also Mirabelle. And in fact, I learned this. She was actually brought in to audition for the Muscle Sister because of her voice that she does for Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but it wasn't her real voice. And when she actually talked to them in real voice, they were like, maybe you should audition for Mirabelle, and that's how she ended up being Mirabelle.
The first time she was on, I don't remember her name, but the first time she was on network television, she was Sofia Vergara's sister on Modern Family.
And also just a great singing voice, by the way, because she sings all her stuff on Stephanie Beatriz, that's her name.
Yeah, I've seen her in a couple different movies we haven't mentioned that she's done along the way since Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and she plays like a nice character, and you're just like, holy shit.
She's so confused. It's
so hard to see her as a nice character, right?
So I don't know that any of us here watched season one of Twisted Metal. I don't care if you did. I did not. I'm not going to watch season two, but I gotta say, if there's one thing that I appreciate about Twisted Metal, the series based on these trailers, it sure as shit knows what it is. It knows that you need to try not to think about it too much. I mean, we have a moment where Sweet Tooth is literally driving around with his head on fire and you're just fine with it because it makes sense within the context of the dystopian world where people are fighting inside cars. And you have John Doe with Stephanie Beatriz playing quiet, as the two like sort of protagonists. Thomas Hayden Church is in this series. I had no idea he was in this series. I mean, I knew about Joe Samoa Joe from the professional wrestling world. He plays the physical representation of Sweet Tooth, though Will Arnett plays the voice. This second season looks like it's going to actually be more of an homage and a true like testament to the video game series of a vehicle to the death tournament taking place, led by some crazed, really, really rich guy who's kind of creepy looking with his lack of eyebrows. He does that. Hey, Dave, you still have eyebrows. You can see him from space. I mean, look how dark those
are. I know. They are, yeah, whatever I've lost up top that has not affected my eyebrows yet. So, yeah, I didn't see Twisted Metal season one either, but heard a lot of good things about it. Kind of like a bit of a surprise hit for sure. And, yeah, this one looks like something, you know, like it's motivating me to go back and watch like the first season. But honestly, guys, my watch list is getting just unwieldy at this point with this things that I need to like things I want to watch, things I there's like a delineation of things I should watch, things I want to watch, and things I need to watch. And the things I need to watch list continues to grow. And that's disconcerting to me because, like, the fuck am I supposed to get through all this stuff? Twisted Metal is one of those ones that I want to watch, but I don't need to watch it yet.
Maybe you should create another show for attitudeofaggression.com.
Let's just keep with what we have right now. Maybe after Game Gone Wrong is done, Tony, we'll come up with something different.
Shows I should watch.
No, Game Gone Wrong will continue with House of the Dragon, Dave.
Yeah, but that's 2 years from now. That's 2 years from now.
And oh, God. Here's the other thing. I feel like the Twisted Metal series is what the Borderlands movie could have been and should have been.
Yes, absolutely.
Like Borderlands just I was not a big player of the game. Like I never played the game, but you could just tell like the attitude and what it was could have been what Twisted Metal is. And I wonder if it would have worked better as a series on Peacock, because that's the other thing. I feel like Peacock, a series on Peacock, just kind of the right place for a Twisted Metal TV show. Might be the right place for a Borderlands.
Twisted
TV
Metal
show.
On the cock? I mean, what else can go wrong, right?
Dave, I know you're excited about this show today. I can tell that you have brought a different energy to the show because he gets to talk about Superman today, everybody. All right, this last trailer, again, a movie I know that PC Tunney has zero interest in watching. If I were the big thumbs up, I've met him via these internet airwaves long enough. We've been on the show long enough to know Red Sonja getting a reboot and finally showing up in theaters. Not exactly his jam. I'm putting this one up actually just for our good friend DJ, that guy who I hear has a podcast. And that, you know, it's somewhat entertaining. Red Sonja is this fascinating, like if Conan the Barbarian fought in a metal bikini with flaming red hair, you get Red Sonja. It is the gratuitous pulp comic that the 80s and the late 70s and early 80s were built for. And it has been turned into a movie one other time with Bridget Nielsen, also had Arnold Schwarzenegger, and was largely believed to supposed to have been a third Conan the Barbarian Red Sonja crossover. But the problems with Conan the Destroyer turned Red Sonja into a very bad, it was a bad movie. And we got this trailer. And I guess DJ was kind of excited for it. The metal bikini was kind of cool, I guess. She it's very gratuitous. I did like the joke at the end when she's getting her weapons and then he's like, and you have this for armor. And she was like, well, what's that supposed to protect? Nothing, but it shows everything really well. Like, thank you for admitting what you are. Also put this trailer in because, and I can't even remember his name, but one of the members of the Umbrella Academy plays the bad guy. The guy who like could die.
Klaus.
If I remember correctly.
The guy who played Klaus,
yes,
right?
Klaus.
Yeah.
Yes, I believe so. He plays the villain.
I'm glad you said that because I was wondering if it's like, am I seeing, my eyes are just going really bad or is that Klaus? But apparently it is.
It's Klaus. His hair is cut so clean and neat, like it doesn't look like him. But if you go to IMDb, like picture comes up, you're like, oh, that's Klaus.
Nice.
So there he is. Here's the thing. I will definitely watch this at 2 o'clock in the morning, some random night on like Netflix when I'm bored, because I know what it's going to give me. It's going to give me a lot of gratuitous violence. It's not going to give me any, like, it's not going to go the full Red Sonja, like, you know, naughty bits, but we're going to get a beautiful woman with a giant sword killing people for fun. And I can watch that for 2 hours. I can do that.
You want to know what's funny, Patrick? You and I are probably, like, most likely to maybe, like, very rarely, but watch a movie at 2 or 3 in the morning. But the difference between you and I is you have stayed up late to do so, where I have just gotten up to do so.
I'm not going to bed. I'm still awake.
And I went to bed so early that I've already gotten up.
I think, like, with this movie, the word gratuitous is very appropriate, because you're going to get a lot of gratuitous stuff in this. There, just looking at the trailer, you could tell, okay, there's going to be gratuitous violence. There's probably going to be gratuitous TNA. I don't know, man.
This movie is failing the Bechdel scale. Like, this movie is failing the Bechdel scale. Just embrace it. It's okay.
Yeah.
Again, if this movie does not take itself seriously, like, if it recognizes what it is, then it will be an enjoyable hour and a half to 2 hours. You can just turn your brain off and just turn your brain off and let it happen. That's all I'm saying. All we're going to say about Red Sonja. TJ, I put that up there for you because I know you're a big fan of the comic. But we've got bigger fish to fry. We got Superman to talk about later. So what we're going to do now is talk about our one piece of news around the nerdosphere that I felt could not be left off of the agenda. And that is, so I'm going to, tomorrow, when you all rightfully listen to the Four Corners podcast, you are going to hear me, damn it, excuse me, I'm going to mute myself for a second.
So, Dave, I was thinking about getting my testicles laminated, Dave. What do you think?
I'd go for it. I would make sure you get them pressed first and then get them laminated.
Well, it's beach season, you know, and you walk up to the girls and you're like, hey, do you suck on balls? And then you show them these nice laminated balls. So you're like, do you suck on these balls? You can knock those balls right out of the park there, you know, boom.
Got you. All right. So I'm back and
you're welcome.
Yeah. You all got that.
Nice interlude. Well done.
Thank PC Tunney.
Thank you, Tunney.
Here's what I was trying to say before I sputtered and fell apart there. Tomorrow, when you listen to Four Corners podcast, you're going to hear Dave and I talk about the fading star that is the All-Star Game in Major League Baseball, and the fact that it's just not something that gets talked about in the sports sphere the way other sports do at this time of year, which is particularly concerning given that it's the only game going in the summer. However, the same could also be said in the nerdosphere with San Diego Comic-Con, which as of today, literally none of the major studios that we would come to expect to do a presentation at San Diego Comic-Con are coming to San Diego Comic-Con. There is no Warner Brothers DCU Hall H coming. There is no Marvel Cinematic Universe Hall H coming. There's Star Wars stuff, but not really a big Star Wars Hall H. There's just no real presence of Hall H. So the news broke this week, though, of a pretty significant name making their San Diego Comic-Con debut in Hall H. And that is arguably the father of modern fandom, George Lucas. He is coming to talk about the Lucas Museum of Narrative Art. He's going to be making this appearance alongside Guillermo del Toro. The panel will be moderated by Queen Latifah. Doug Chang, who is an Academy Award-winning artist, will all be there as well. And they're going to discuss the power of illustrated stories and the role of narrative art in society. So highbrow stuff. From ancient cave drawings and hieroglyphics to paintings, murals, illustrations, comics, digital media, and sculptures, the panel will delve into the universal language of illustrated storytelling. So it's being held in the last day of the convention too, which is also kind of a big deal. Sunday, July 27th. Usually Sunday, July 27th of Comic-Con is that's the day reserved for nothing exciting because everybody's packing up and leaving on Sunday. But there's no way he's not going to talk about Star Wars. Like, he's going to talk about the museum, and I'm sure part of it will be talking about it in part with how it relates to this museum. But Dave, George Lucas finally, when this genuinely surprised me, I had no idea. You'd never been to San Diego Comic-Con in any capacity. It's a big deal.
It really is. When you think about guys that like you're saying, Pat, guys that you would look at as far as Comic-Con and say, he had to have been there at some time, right? And when you read this article, you realize, nope, he has not been there before. And that's surprising. You got to figure, yeah, he's right. He's got to talk about Star Wars. It leads you to wonder whether they're going to get into questions such as, would you have done X, Y, and Z differently? You know, how would you have handled the sequel trilogy if you'd been there? I don't know if he'll go down that path. I would be surprised if somebody doesn't ask him that on the panel and get into that whole thing. You know, maybe he discloses that he's involved in whatever's happening in Star Wars going forward. That would be kind of cool if there's some sort of George Lucas involvement in wherever we're going from there. I'd be interested to know if he's got any other projects in the hopper. I mean, Spielberg were the ones who did Raiders of the Lost Ark, right? And now you've got... Right. Now you got this rumor that they're going to reboot that. Is he going to be involved in that? It's just huge because, like, I think we're talking about, like, you know, Lucasfilm is still integrally involved in so many special effects and things in so many movies nowadays.
ILM, Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah, right. And you know, he's still a big part of the industry in that way. And he's the godfather, the grandfather, the patriarch of most everything in nerd culture. Him and Spielberg, you can say 1A and 1B. So to get him at Comic-Con and to hear what he has to say is going to be fascinating stuff. I mean, like you're saying, Pat, with the distinctive absence of heavy hitters at Comic-Con this year, for them to kind of pull this out is a bit of a coup. You know, that's a big get on their part that really salvages what Comic-Con is supposed to be, and it should be a really, really good panel. And the other guys involved, Del Toro is going to be there as well. That should be one that's appointment viewing.
Have I ever told you that one of my favorite Saturday Night Live monologues of all time, Tunny, is Queen Latifah when she talks about how she is the queen of the Latifians? Look it up. It's one of the funniest things ever.
No,
Tony, you dropped your mic.
No, anything from George Lucas is something you want to see. You know, I talk about like filling the holes in Star Wars, not necessarily in the story, but in the storytelling as well. It seems like this museum is going to kind of help fulfill the need for us to know how they were telling the story back in the day. So it's exciting. I would imagine there's going to be rules to the questions being allowed to ask as well. But anytime you can get into the mind of someone as genius and brilliant, and, you know, it's one of the, you know, we talk about the big five project, but we have a big three on bandwagon nerds, and it's Marvel, it's DC, and it's Star Wars. And I anytime you can get a deeper look into that, we're all for it.
Right.
I got to laugh.
I'm going to.
Did Ray send you guys this text that he just sent me?
No. Does he hate it?
No, he says this movie already started off great. Superman lost. Laughed my ass off. I'm not even going to respond to that.
We'll get to that in a second.
He only wants to troll you, Dave.
I know.
Right. I'm going through the Comic-Con schedule. So your Hall H stuff so far. The Toxic Avenger is on Thursday. They have a panel at 5:30 p.m.
Which, by the way, looks great, to be honest with you. The casting looks like amazing.
A hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to get it. So, Comedy Central Adult Animation. That actually might be fun because...
Yeah, I want to see what they're bringing.
South Park, Beavis and Butthead, and Digman are what's listed as the shows.
What?
But given what we know between the collaboration of Parker and Stone and... their deal with Paramount right now. I don't know, man. That'd be fun to watch. Might be interesting.
You said Digman?
Digman.
Do you know what that is?
I've never even heard of it. No idea.
I'm hoping it's something new. So I'm interested. I'm always interested in a good new adult cartoon. Like, you know, we're raised on The Simpsons, right? And everything else that came after it. So it's always good to see, try and find. It's been a long time since I've really latched on. I think Harley Quinn I kind of did, but I really haven't the last couple seasons now. So... Sorry, yeah. Patrick.
I actually haven't finished the last season of Harley Quinn myself. It started to get a little redundant. But like there's an Outlander panel in Hall H from Stars. Like, this is just, it's not a exciting lineup. So, all right, George Lucas can only help that. Let us, you know what? It's time to take a commercial break. We've gone on long enough. We have given them 35 minutes or so of quality non-Superman related content. We're going to take our first commercial break, our only commercial break today. And when we come back, we're going to give ourselves as much time as we need for Dave to wax poetically about James Gunn's Superman film. So stick around for that. Yes. Okay.
Dave will just kept, not... just kept going. Yeah, that was like...
It's because you had the microphone down. So you had the microphone down and we could hear you.
Well, now I'm just going to... And I'll just say it out loud. I'm going to play the commercial and then we'll end the call and come back.
That's what we're going to do. So curtain pulled. Magic of editing. Stick around. We're going to talk everything Superman when we come back. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
And welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of thechairshot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. ProWrestlingTees.com/chairshot for all of your Chairshot swag needs, including the Bandwagon Nerds t-shirt, only $19.99. Spend a few dollars more, get it soft style, celebrate the greatest episode in the history of David Ungar's life. Because we are here, it's time. All three of us nerds have seen Superman, and it's been quite the journey. How are you going, old school?
Honey, basically throwing down the gauntlet to Spotify. Just...
there. Fuck you, Spotify.
Yeah, fuck you, Spotify.
Here's a spoon, eat my ass. There you go.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So we're gonna get into it. Let's start with this. I'm gonna bring it up. So when we've been talking about this movie for fucking ever, like just the anticipation ever since James Gunn has been announced. He's been announced as the, you know, the guy who is writing, directing this movie. It's going to be his baby. It's his first introduction, foray into this new DC universe. And the first, the biggest thing that we have talked about, and that, and here's the thing, is I'm going to say this, and whether it's true or not, Dave, and you can correct me or not, I really feel like there was a lot of anxiety on your part as a fan of this property that you wanted it to do well and that you were really, really concerned about whether or not this was going to go well, whether it be financially at the box office and whether it was going to be a good movie. Well, one of the things that I have said very clearly is I felt like this movie was going to make a fuck ton of money, no matter whether it was good or bad. Obviously, if it's good, and spoiler alert, all three of us think this is an excellent film. I felt like it would go out and do gangbusters minimally first weekend, but I think it's going to have some staying power. As of right now, it is over 100. It's well on its way to 140 some million domestic, or 120 some million domestically. It's over 90 some million internationally. It is going to make over $200 million in its opening weekend. And it has no competition next weekend. like no real competition next week. So it is going to rule the box office this week and next week. I think there will be multiple rewatches, and I think that there will be people who, based on word of mouth and the strength of what has been largely very positive reviews from both critics and fans, that this movie is going to do well. And frankly, I think I would hope that I would assume that there's a level of relief and happiness with just the box office alone and how it's done this weekend so far.
I from my standpoint, I was never, and you've been a party to this conversation, the debate that Ray and I have had about Superman versus Fantastic Four, what was going to have the better box office. Fantastic Four is going to have a very difficult time matching what Superman's thrown down. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. I have no doubt Fantastic Four is going to be a great movie as well. Box office is going to be tough. But I think the bigger concern was the quality of the movie, whether James Gunn could capture the essence of Superman based on his background and you know, how great he did with Guardians of the Galaxy. Would his vision of Superman really line up with what a lot of Superman fans wanted? You had so much backlash from the cult of Snyder as far as just
We're going to get to that. No, I gave you a rundown for a reason, sir. We're talking okay. Box office right now.
Yeah.
I know we have a lot and we're going to spit it all out. I just also want to kind of keep us focused.
I think the box office it's better than I thought. I thought there might be some more backlash because of other things that happened, which I know we'll get into, but the box office numbers are very strong. I agree with you. I think this has got staying power. I think there are people who may have been on the fence. I really want to work on trying to convince DJ to actually go watch it. I don't think I'll be successful, but there's a lot of people in that boat who may have said, no, I'm going to pass on this because of the trailers. And I think we would all agree that the trailers are a bit of a misdirection for where the movie actually goes. So I think you're right.
The trailers themselves are only, most of the trailer is the first 30 minutes of the movie.
Yes.
Right. And I think that's really important to pay attention to, is it really is the only about the first 30 minutes of the movie.
It really is. So I'm with you. I think this movie will have better staying power. It'll do some bigger numbers as we go along. More people will go and see it. Anybody on the fence will probably hear the reviews, hopefully listen to a show like this and be convinced that, okay, sounds like he got it right. Maybe I better go check this out.
So Superman is currently sitting at $122 million domestically. It's the third biggest box office opening weekend of 2025, behind only a Minecraft movie at $162 million and Lilo and Stitch, because that fucking blue alien cannot be escaped. I'm going to stand by my prediction. I think this will get to a billion. I think it'll get to a billion when it's all said and done.
Did it have a better opening than Jurassic World?
Number three, so it beat Jurassic World. That's what they're saying. This is straight impressive. From Variety. So I don't go to Variety for opinion pieces, but I do go to the Entertainment Magazine for box office numbers. And it's turned out was slightly softer than expected at the international box office market, with $95 million from 78 markets.
Yeah,
bringing the global tally to $217 million. So it started stronger. It's funny. Some of the followers of box office, you know, sticking with an old term that pissed people off, saying that the whole truth, justice, American way thing hurt the international. That's just nonsense, silly talk. Tunney, am I off? $1 billion? I think $1 billion is doable.
Yeah, it's a good start. I think it's interesting. The movie, the budget was like $240 million. So like everything is gravy now, right? Like, it's all gravy. And the more interesting question we want to talk box office is, if Fantastic Four falls so much short of what Batman does, now we have a new narrative. Oh, Marvel's on the down. Here comes DC.
Superman, new... not, you said Batman. You mean Superman, right?
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
I was like, damn, Marvel, if it falls Superman, short of Batman, it's a problem.
I'm sorry. But you know what I'm saying? It, like, we could have a new narrative if we have that happening. But good for DC, good for James Gunn, good for David Corenswet, by the way, for this happening, such a really good outing the first weekend. Like, he doesn't have to hope that he has a big weekend. He already knows he's going to have a big second weekend now, right? So it's great. Box office wise, A++++, more than they could have imagined over at DCU.
Right. And let's roll into that that second piece there. So there was a lot of noise surrounding the release of this film. And there were a couple of different things that I saw. So one, there has been the Snyderverse like stupidity, the Snyderverse box office stuff. There is the far right news outlets that fundamentally don't understand that a character that was written by two children of Jewish immigrants in the late 1930s about a man of a child being sent away from the eradication of their people in the 1930s might have something to do with being an immigrant story. He's literally from another planet in a world that's not his. A lot of stuff and nonsense. And then some critique and some concern about the Superman character and its portrayal. Just the idea that Superman was showing a lot of vulnerability. And I even heard that anecdotally from a friend of mine. I was at karaoke at a bar on Friday night. I'm sitting there. I was like, oh, I'm taking the little guy with me to go see Superman. And the bartender, who was a friend of mine, was like, oh, a couple of my friends went and saw it and they were really bothered by it because they were like, it was fine, but like Superman looked weak all the time and all this. It's like, you really have to understand, like, a dude who's completely invulnerable and unbeatable is not a compelling story. I would argue one of the biggest problems with Justice League in general, never mind Batman versus Superman, which I just hate because it's a stupid story, the vulnerability of Superman isn't really there, which is why he has to be taken out of the equation so much in the Zack Snyderverse, because he's literally fucking unbeatable. And if he's unbeatable, what's the story? The thing that I thought was really impressive about this is that we get thrust literally the very first trailer that we ever saw of Superman crash landing in the Arctic. That's the opening scene of the movie, him getting his ass kicked. And we get messages explaining to us the progression of how we got there. And then Gunn does a great job of explaining us through Lex Luthor that he's been studying this guy for years to devise a way to defeat him. And that is why Superman is vulnerable and why we get to see him be in peril through most of this movie. I thought it was really good. I think this noise is really just that, guys. I think that there's been a lot of noise. I don't think any of it has any left at all. And I think the box office results are showing that.
The the notion about Superman's vulnerability. I love Ray Cash, but Ray is very similar to like my niece and nephew, who their big complaint about Superman is he is unbeatable. And what this movie does brilliantly is for half of the movie, three quarters of the movie, Superman's getting his ass kicked. He is always the underdog, and no other Superman movie has portrayed him in a way that he is always climbing up that hill. To get, I mean, he's just literally on the defensive the whole time, trying to survive. And then when they flip it in the last quarter and finally give him his powers and let it turn him loose, it's an awesome moment to actually, you feel like you're cheering for him. Like, come on, man, turn loose. I know you've got more than this. And when he finally does start whooping ass, it's awesome. So anybody saying, oh, this isn't Superman, he's too vulnerable. Well, you bitch about him being a Boy Scout. You bitch about him being unbeatable. You get three quarters of a movie where he's actually not unbeatable, and it makes him, it actually humanizes him in a way and takes you away from what a lot of the complaints about Superman have been in the past. I thought Gunn was brilliant about that. I thought it was brilliant that he set up the entire DC universe in 1 minute of a scrawl that was, you know, I know people say, oh, it's like Star Wars. No, it really wasn't. But he establishes where we are. In 1 minute, you know exactly where you are in the DC universe. Okay, we're 3 years in. He's been here for three. He announced himself 3 years ago. I thought he did a great job with that. I did nonsense about, you know, Superman getting his ass kicked and he's not strong enough. Yeah, whatever. I mean, and all the stuff on the right, And just, it's like you said, Pat, a lot of noise, a lot of stupidity. The cult of Snyder is still trashing the movie and they haven't even seen it. They haven't even seen it. Well, and they're just bullshit reviews about it.
Yeah, there's been so many interesting posts from the Snyderverse thing, which, guys, the Snyderverse at this point is damn near a decade gone. Like, just stop. It's not coming back. I mean, and if you love the Snyderverse, like, and I'll even use this group. Like, Dave, you and Tony and DJ, all of you enjoyed on some level, especially the extended Snyderverse cut. Like, you guys liked it. There's nothing wrong with that.
The Snyder cut, as watched in chapters, is excellent.
It doesn't mean, though, that he got Superman right. Or any of these characters right. It was an enjoyable movie for what it was. It doesn't mean that he ever got Superman right. And Gunn, I think, got Superman right.
That's correct statement. I don't even think we should compare. Let's just move on and take this for what it is because it's so damn good. And Dave, you bring up the fact that for 3/4 of the movie, he's the underdog, right?
Yes.
And maybe even like more so. But even when he's not, even when he starts to shift the momentum back to good, he still needs all these supporting characters with him. You know, Terrific and Lois
and Lantern
and Lantern and Crypto. I mean, he needs all of that. Metamorpho, right? Like all these different things. He can't. He even says at one point, he's going down the river, and I can't do this myself. Right? He can save the child, but he needed help, and it just was a beautiful, beautiful story. I can't wait till we get into the casting and the way the characters played, the actors played some of these characters, because I think not thinking about it is the best compliment you can give, and we'll get to that.
Yeah, one of my more interesting, I promise this will be the last we kind of talk about the Snyderverse thing. I found it very amusing that the argument folks made for momentum stolen was not Justice League. It was Black Adam.
Oh, God.
I saw people arguing that because they did this big setup and tease for Black Adam, that they were somehow done dirty. And I wanted to be like, no, Black Adam is an objectively weak movie. And here's the thing. It's weak because of Dwayne Johnson. Because Dwayne Johnson refused to have that character in any level of danger. And that's ultimately, like, as much as we say we want our like, you know, super perfect heroes, the thing that makes Thor more interesting than Captain Marvel is that Thor is shown to be vulnerable at times.
Mm-hmm.
Never really seen that out of Captain Marvel. Even in the Marvels, she's not vulnerable.
Oh.
It's her own psyche.
The lesson is human beings relate to super-powered people with flaws because all of us have struggles every single day.
Right. And so this idea that we need to have this perfection, this unbeatable godlike creature that just runs roughshod, but that's a boring 2-hour movie. That's a boring movie. Nobody wants to see that.
Unless we're talking about the paragon of love and the perfectness of...
It's a boring movie.
Grant Gustin. Grant Gustin needs to come back to the DCU. Did you hear that, James?
I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that, Tony. Don't know if it's going to happen.
You know what? Tony, you doing that, that's so exasperating that I feel like I've now lied to the studio audience. And I promised not another commercial break. But because you've done this to that, my stress levels, you did that. It was all you.
Uh-huh.
And in no way, because something went wrong with the call. It was all you.
It's all Tony.
It was all you.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
All Tony. Then we are going to take a second commercial break. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation about Superman. We're going to get into some possible spinoffs, and then we're going to really dig into the guts of the movie. So stick around for that. You're listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out thechairshot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, thechairshot.com.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Bandwagon Nerds here on the ChairShot Radio Network, a part of TheChairShot.com, where we remind you to always use your head. For real this time, no more commercial breaks. Head over to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheChairShot after this. Oh, I got the K of all K, by the way. You all, revisionist history boys at the Chair Shot, acting like The Amazing Spider-Man 2 suddenly became a good movie. Completely derailed the Chair Shot wrestling chat thread for a minute there. So, Dave, you know what you did. You're wrong.
All I said was they got the death of Gwen Stacy pretty
they didn't, though.
Right.
They really did not. Well, they didn't at all. And I'm just going to say, take this guy's expert knowledge and just recognize. No, it's like if you want to go into Spider-Man lore, Patrick O'Dowd's your man. Am I wrong?
Nope.
Am I wrong? If I want to go into Superman lore, like we're about to, I go to Dave. Like that's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Before we get into just sort of talking about the show itself, I did see an article that we shared and wanted to talk about. This thing is going so well, we're already talking spinoffs. And the spinoff I have is, the spinoff article I have is talking about the possibility of two shows for characters within the Superman film. The first is for Edie Gathegi's Mr. Terrific, who highlight of the film for me, loved him very, very much, as well as Skylar Gisotto's Jimmy Olsen, who was also kind of a low-key surprise for me about what they did with him and that character. To where I, right? All the ladies want him, and the whole Eve Tessmacher romance.
Yeah, like this girl is super hot, was with Lex, and wanted nothing more to be back with Jimmy.
Jimmy, who I also appreciate, is like a 6, maybe a 7, in my opinion. Like, he's attainable hot. Like, he's attainable
hot. I feel like Jimmy, I think Jimmy's very unassuming, and you can read into that all you like.
The guy's come a long way from having his brother put a plastic bag over his head and being yelled to go to sleep on vacation, which you and I reviewed so highly, Patrick, on the Nerd Review.
Man alive, is that a bad movie?
That part was good. That part was funny, but the rest of it, not so much.
Here's the thing. I like the idea of both of these characters getting their own show because I think they could be interesting shows. But if you have to pick one, Tony, who are you picking? What do you want to see more?
The aptly named and executed Mr. Terrific, that may have been, and this is not a diss on the rest of the cast, because I thought the execution of characters was magnificent, but the portrayal of Mr. Terrific was more than terrific, period. Like, one of the best parts of the movie was that portrayal of that character. So yes, that, and I would be equally excited for Jimmy as well, considering what we just talked about and the whole unassuming ladies man and you know, like just connected, right? Like didn't think he'd be that. He's very unassuming. Is a great adjective for him.
No, he was terrific in every way. Like you're saying, Tony, he was he was like, and this, you know, this is not meant as a diss on the Snyderverse as well, but he felt like kind of what Cyborg should have been, you know, that sort of thing. Like, he was very tech savvy. He had that cool, suave delivery. There was like, I was like listening to him talk. I was like, God, he sounds almost like Lincoln Osiris from Tropic Thunder in a few places, just the way he talked. But he was so smooth and smart and just didn't really get rattled, even though he was facing an interdimensional pocket universe rift that was going to destroy everything. Jimmy's fun. But Mr. Terrific's where it's at. He was, he stole the show. I mean, you know, between him and Crypto are the ones that say they stole this thing. But yeah, Mr. Terrific was, he was the one. So I would like to see more with him and the whole Justice Gang for that matter.
Here's the thing. Totally different shows. Like, that's the thing that you got to keep in mind. These will be completely different shows in genre and style. And yes. So, like, you know, the Jimmy Olsen story would be, like, somewhat comedic in nature. Like, that is a romantic comedy waiting to happen. A sitcom, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, can you remember, like, an old single-camera sitcom, Tony?
One's She-Hulk, one's, like, the Captain series they did, you know?
Captain America?
Big difference. Yeah. Cap. Well, he was turning.
That Captain
was,
guy.
It was like, Falcon, well, it was the beat. It was, yeah, thank you. See, it wasn't actually. Yeah. Come on, man.
Mr. Terrific. Oh, they changed the name at the end of the show. Mr. Terrific. Yeah, I think Mr. Terrific is, I think Mr. Terrific would be very interesting because I could see it being done more as like a thriller or a comic book thriller with him like having to use his technology and his skills and his brain to do all that. Because the thing that's great about Mr. Terrific is he's terrific, but he's like your Tony Stark. He's not necessarily OP superpowered. He's just a fucking genius. Technology and made himself invisible.
I wanted to ask Pat, one of the concerns you had about was when we were leading into this was Lois flying the UFO or whatever that it is. And they solved that. He solved that for you. Yeah.
I mean, I appreciated that they wrote it out. Like, when it comes to quibbles with this show, like, it's fine. Like, that she, like, I get, you do it narratively, it gets you there so that she can fly it. And, you know, and she's never good at it. I will say that. Like, the ship is wobbly and awful, which I appreciate that the gun was like, okay, cynical assholes like Patrick O'Dowd are gonna hate on X. And he addressed that. And I loved it. The other big thing that you know, you talked about other potential spinoffs. The Justice Gang absolutely could be a spinoff. We saw not a spinoff, but another DC Universe character appear in Peacemaker. He was in the movie. Giving a shout out to John Cena. Good job. That next season is coming, so that was a nice way of throwing him in there and being like, "Hey, coming in about a month is season two of Peacemaker." Same thing with Rick Flagg being in there as well. Just another reminder that these characters and other shows are going to be about. And there's a gold mine of potential other things happening that are either talked about being set up. And there are setups, and we're going to get to that in about 30 seconds. Other than a Justice Gang, I think I heard like a Guy Gardner-centric show. Any other characters scream out to you, show, not movie, show, like a spinoff show?
You got to figure if Hawkgirl's around, Hawkman's not far behind, but I don't know if that warrants a full-blown show. I'm just wondering, do you guys think Superman shows up in Peacemaker Season 2? Because Chris talks some shit about him. I wouldn't be surprised if he shows just up like in one of the episodes.
Quick, like a post-credit to one of the episodes, that'd be great. Sure. Like, just to say, hey, actually, and then John's like, oh, no, I am Minute Man or something like that, you know? And then
at some point down the
road, he helps him out.
I remember where I screwed up with the trailer park. Because I got a full-on Peacemaker Season 2 trailer. And have you guys seen this yet? We haven't talked about it on the show.
I think so.
He's traveling into other dimensions, guys. He's going into other dimensions, and he finds like a better dimension where he's like popular. I can't believe I left that. I knew there was something I forgot.
All right. Well, tune in next week to Bandwagon Nerds 298.
Because apparently we got to talk about that. All right. Let's talk about this movie itself. And, you know, and I think it would be unfair to let anybody other than David Ungar talk about his feelings watching this film and just your takeaways from James Gunn's Superman. So Dave, the floor is yours.
It is the best DC movie since Dark Knight. I don't have any qualms saying that. And I love Robert Pattinson's Batman. Absolutely. But you know, and if you're a Batman fan, you're going to probably lean into that. And I'm a Superman fan, so I'm going to lean. I really think this is the best DC movie since Dark Knight. I think Gunn got it right in so many places in this movie. And we already talked about one of the big ones, which is where he appeals to the people who say Superman's OP, unbeatable, too powered. And the way he approached that was brilliant, just by making him the underdog for so much of the movie. It's just, you know, Lex Luthor, I got to say this, and I don't know if you want to talk about casting now or whether you want to save that, but Nicholas Holt is, and it pains me to say this because I love Gene Hackman. Absolutely love Gene Hackman's portrayal of Lex Luthor. This was the best Lex Luthor that I've seen portrayed. There was nothing redemptive about this character. He was an evil piece of shit. He was a manipulative asshole. He was brilliant. These are all the things that I equate with Lex Luthor. And I love Gene Hackman, but I think Holt got it better, truer than anybody has so far. Corn Sweat was magnificent. I would not say Christopher Reeve's always going to be my favorite Superman, and that hasn't changed. Corn Sweat's easily number two. He really got the portrayal right. Some of the criticisms I've seen is that we didn't get enough Clark. I get it, but this was really a movie about establishing Superman. And the moments where he's Clark, yeah, that's Clark Kent. You know, that, and this is, you know, that sort of thing. And I could really see that. Rachel Brosnahan's easily the best Lois Lane of all time. That's I don't even think you could
Don't you dare besmirch the beautiful Margot Kidder.
Unless you're in front of a fireplace with a bearskin rug, Patrick.
Pink bearskin rug at Niagara Falls. She was magnificent as Lois Lane. You almost got me saying Margot Kidder. She was magnificent as Lois because this is what Lois is. You know, she's not just this all-powering woman power all the time. She's inquisitive. She's a journalist. She's an excellent journalist, a great investigative reporter. But kind of the way she's been portrayed in other things, you know, she was never this damsel in distress sort of thing. You know, Margot Kidder got that part right. But I thought her portrayal and like her conflict as far as how she feels about Clark and Superman, because very early in their relationship, they're 3 months in. She knows who Clark is. She knows who Superman is. She's not sure about her feelings because she's not really sure about who he is. And as the movie comes along and you start getting doubts about Superman's real mission because of this hacked message that he got from his parents, Jor-El and I forget Laura, I think was the mother's name. You know, and that's a big aspect of the movie that I'm not sure about because, and I imagine we're going to address that later on in other stuff. But I just thought they got so many aspects right. Krypto was fantastic. They, you know, the great thing is, yeah, he's a super dog, but he's a dog. And they always, everything about Krypto is that he's a dog first. Lex's big thing with him is injecting images of him chasing squirrels into his brain to control him. He never leaves the fact that he's a dog. Superman's like, get the toy, that sort of thing. I love Krypto in this. The Justice Gang was great. Guy Gardner, begrudgingly, I kind of grew to like Guy a little bit. He wasn't as big of a pompous prick as he is in the comics. He was prickish enough. Hot Girl, yeah, I think they could have developed her a little bit more. She was almost an afterthought in certain places, but love my wife dearly, obviously. One of her big criticisms were Clark's parents in Kansas. She thought that Gunn portrayed.
They made them sound so fucking Kansas stupid rude.
Yeah. Okay. So you're
like. Like
the problem with that though is their intentions and actual what they know and do is far beyond what they're showing you. Do you know what I'm saying? Those kind of people aren't as simple as you think they are.
Right. Well, and that was my big problem is like, so at the end of the day, you know, Clark chooses his family. Like that's at the end of the movie, Clark chooses his family and he declares Ma and Pa Kent his parents. And I don't mind that they're you know funny old like my old man is doesn't entirely know how to operate a fucking phone. You know, it just felt like they died like that those two were instructed to dial it to like 28 on a scale of 10 with the country. And it was so bumpkin-y that it turned me off a little bit. And in the land of complaints, like it's a minor complaint. The heart of like, you know, that moment where he's sitting with his dad and, you know, with Pa Kent and he's like, your actions are, you know, who you are. what you think. That's really important. It's really well done. It's the silly side of him on the back end, which is very much a James Gunn thing. It's very much something that he does. He does like his brand of humor, and it's very much his brand of humor with him. I didn't like that. I didn't care for it.
And she's in the same camp as you, that like they dumbed them down too much and made them too bumpkin-y. And I get that complaint.
I wouldn't say dumbed down. They leaned so far into like the heavy accent, and they look like they have a fucking outhouse instead of a bathroom. just stuff like that. I mean, I'm not like saying it did, but it just that was the feeling.
Like you said, Pa Kent gives the most important speech in the movie. Very similar to that. Superman gives the other second one where he declares why his humanity to Lex and why Lex is a piece of shit and doesn't understand anything about anything. But yeah, the movie's great. The cameo from Supergirl, Miley. People are bitching about that.
Millie
Alcock, right? Is that her name or?
Alcock.
Talking.
Why are people bitching about that?
Because they're saying, they're saying that the notion that people want to draw the comparison to like when Zach brought in a female character as Wonder Woman and they bring in a drunken Supergirl, it's like you guys are morons because you don't understand the cool part about that is. She's dealing with her own trauma. We haven't gotten into it yet. She's dealing with her own trauma, and her way of addressing that is to go to planets with a red sun so she can get drunk, so she can party. And Crypto's her dog, so we didn't have to address the whole thing. Well, how did Crypto get? He came with her. So it's like, let some of this stuff gestate a little bit. I thought I'm not going to sit there and say this is better than Superman 78 or even better than Superman 2, because I don't think so. But
Superman 2 is the best Superman.
I know. But if you're looking for the movie to start the DCU off on the right foot, you could not have asked for a better start than this. I really don't think so. And I know people are upset. There's nothing about Batman. Batman would not have fit in anywhere in this movie.
Actually, here's what's funny. They were looking for the wrong shit, because the thing that I caught and that I love was that they set up the next parts of Gunn's DC vision without an end credit scene. Like, neither of those post credit scenes are necessary. Like, they're fun, but they don't set up anything particularly new. Everything was put in front of you in the movie if you're paying attention to it. And if you are so hung up on that you must have Batman, then you are not paying attention and you're refusing to pay attention, because Supergirl's the next movie. They said that we established Peacemaker as part of this. We established the American government being extremely concerned about superheroes at the end of that. Like, the Secretary of Defense is sitting there with Mr. Flag and being like, well, I hope you're happy because they're in charge now.
Yeah.
Like, that's a mistrust. You got the fledgling Justice League sitting there. You got a look at Maxwell Lord very, very briefly at the very end, giving a brief interview. And even in that moment, like, let's just take a moment to appreciate the other Gunn in our life, because he's great. And I wish that he got as much love as he deserves.
There was a sign, a street sign or a highway sign for Gotham when that rift is opening up. So it's there.
Yeah. The only thing that we didn't see, Sean Gunn, by the way, I was stalling for time. The only thing that was missing was a Wayne Enterprises sign someplace. Like, there, I would assume there would have been a Wayne Enterprises building. But as you mentioned, there was a road sign to Gotham. So it's not like it's not there. Chill the fuck out, people. My other quibble and only complaint, and you already hit it on it once, I really felt like most of the tertiary or side characters got some level of like character development and personality outside of Hawkgirl. She was really portrayed, like, her note, like, in none of the characters off to the side. Mr. Terrific got a lot of time and it was clear that Mr. Terrific was going to. Guy Gardner got a fair amount of time. She was there, and she was like the sarcastic 20-something, you know, late early 20-something person, and that was a nice quirk and all. But like, I wanted just a little bit more. Like, what was more of her thing other than she's not afraid to drop somebody from really high heights and kill them? Like, okay, like, but we don't get that like truly established ahead of it for us to really be ready for it.
There was no other superhero that we rooted for that recklessly killed someone, and she was the one. Yeah. So I think that just
Except for
enough.
Superman lasering all the dudes flying around him.
Yeah, but those were like evil dudes.
Well, that guy was an evil dude too. He was an evil.
Yeah, but she didn't have to kill him to save. She didn't have to kill him to save her life. Superman kind of did.
Right, she didn't. Let's also, you know, we haven't talked about this much, but Guy Gardner throwing hands up and every other hand being a middle finger was pretty funny. That was very entertaining.
And it was important because Guy earlier in the movie was using oven mitts. And then when it really came down to it at the end, it got much more malevolent and serious. And so Guy showing his powers.
And I'm going to talk about the last thing that I really took away from this film and ultimately is what made it work as a complete home run for me, because the action stuff was important. Superman being vulnerable was important. You know, we haven't even talked about Ultraman yet, and the Superman clone being sucked into a black hole. He'll be back. No significant villain died in this movie, so they're all able to come back. Clark Kent / Superman and Lois Lane's relationship is the other huge win in this movie. And you talked about, you know, how great Cornsweet was as a Superman. His chemistry with, I'm going to forget her name again. Rachel Brosnahan.
Yeah.
Was terrific. Was wonderful. And, you know, for the folks that were upset about the limitations of Clark being, or the lack of Clark in this thing, you get the most of Clark and who he is in the conflict that he and Lois have in their relationship as Lois the cynic versus Clark the optimist. And can they be together when they clearly want to be together? And Clark being the one who says, "I love you" first, and her coming back later and saying, "I love you." It's just a really well done arc and relationship that creates a beautiful foundation that will be solid, I think, for as long as James Gunn is doing these movies with the DCU. I loved it. I thought they were great. I thought that they hit huge with the two of them, and that was chef's kiss. Like, that was the cherry on top. And then I also absolutely love that they think they're fooling anybody, and as they go off to have their interview, Perry White looks over at who was it? Was it Jimmy?
It was Jimmy.
Yeah. How long has this been going on? 3 months.
How long they've been tagging each other? About 3 months. No, everybody knows. It's adorable.
When she says
Wendell Pierce, low key, great Perry White.
Yeah. Yeah, like everything you just said, Pat. The love story between Clark and Lois is low key one of the best parts of the movie. And it really, when she says "I love you too," it really does tug on your heartstrings. I mean, I felt it. You know, I felt that moment pretty deeply, because it's like we can all relate to when you get into the beginnings of a relationship that's really going to go to the next level. You struggle with that. You know, am I there? Do I feel the same way? And for her to have that realization, because she realizes just what Clark means to her with everything that he goes through just to get back to not just her, but to Metropolis. I mean, it's that vulnerability and it's selling you on who Superman is and why he's so important and why his power sets. Yes, they are godlike in many ways, but when it's done right and brought to the forefront like Gunn did, it just means something different. And it means even more so than what happened with Christopher Reeves, because Reeve was always this overpowered character that only vulnerability was Lex's intellect and kryptonite. And here it's just so different, and there's so many different layers to this and how they bring this forward that I honestly did not think Gunn could pull off something on this level, but he sure did.
All right,
Tony,
the MVP Well, you know, Corin Sweat hit a grand slam. Brosnahan did something baseball related that we don't even know how to name it. Like, when I talk about the fact that it doesn't get talked about is the most important thing. Lois Lane is kind of like a really good referee or umpire that if you really didn't notice them, they did a great fucking job. But we even noticed how good of a job she did, which makes it even better. Like, this movie is a 7.5 with a mediocre Lois Lane. It's a 9 out of 10 because Lois Lane was portrayed so exceptionally. The biggest thing for me when you guys talk about their relationship is not when Lois Lane said, "I love you" back. We knew that was coming when she answered Clark Kent's question of, "What did you mean when you said this relationship couldn't work, or I knew this relationship wouldn't work?" And she said, "I don't know." And to him, that meant she was just saying something because she was scared. It didn't really mean anything. He smiled and knew the "I love you" was coming, right? She came for him. That was excellent. I thought that was amazing. You guys talk about spinoffs, right? What about the Superman robots? Gary, that's Alan Tudyk. What about an animated series about when Superman's gone and what happens in the Fortress of Solitude with the robots? Because I thought the fact that he called him Gary and that he mentioned he wanted to be called Gary subtly was excellent.
So I wanted to get to this real quick because Alan Tudyk is one voice. You also have to recognize Michael Rooker was Superman robot number one. Palm Klimtiff, Mantis, was Superman robot number 5. Grace Chan, Superman robot number 12. There's a lot of James Gunn's friends who got to voice robots in the Superman movie, and I love it.
And this movie's so good.
Sorry if I butchered any of those names.
No, this movie's so good, you think more of those friends of his might want to come over to his side of the fence, perhaps.
Anthony Carrigan as Metamorpho is simply brilliant. And I think we all shifted on Nathan Fillion's version of Guy Gardner when he looked over at him when he liked the Justice Gang name and said, "You're in." It was like, oh, there is some kind of, you know, just really guarded good person inside of that lantern right there. So, man, I'm just, did you guys notice that though? Mr. Terrific, Guy Gardner, and Hawkgirl, while they were the Justice Gang in quotation marks, they had the Justice League symbol on their chests. They had the JNL.
They were building the Hall of Justice. Right.
So like, it's coming. Like, yeah, you're talking about things that are coming. But yeah, I love the whole thing. And in closing, you're right. Wendell Pierce was amazing. I also like Terrence Rosemore as Otis, the immediate guy who was making all the final decisions for Lex Luthor. He was brilliant. Like, the calm when everybody else was like insanely going crazy. Brilliant.
It's so interesting to see the contrast from 78 Lex and Otis to what Gunn did, because, and here's the thing, I think it's apples to pomegranates to try to compare the two, because Gene Hackman's take on the character is a little silly to a level, because he's also a product of the time in the comics at the time, right? And so when he's talking about my intellectual superiority, I'm better than everybody else, that's what the character was in 1978. And then you have Otis, played by the great Ned Beatty, being like, "Whatever you say, Mr. Luthor," like, totally different thing, complete comic relief, great, great stuff. Dave, I wanted to get your opinion on this. You talked about it, and Tony, you too, and we are coming up on the end of this, but I wanted to get your thoughts on the Bradley Cooper cameo that was Jor-El and the message from Jor-El and Laura that I was startled by, because it's very much, and again, this is me not as familiar with Superman comics. Has that ever been the reason that Jor-El has sent Kal-El to Earth?
I've never seen it.
To do a kind of go full Viltrumite?
Yeah, I have not seen that. Now, maybe, Tony, I don't know, did you see Red Sun Superman, the DC animated thing where he crashes in Russia instead of Kansas?
Yeah.
Was there anything like that in there?
The problem with that is it's like bred to be villainous, not like this where he was raised to be a good person. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, they wanted to take over the Earth there. Yeah.
Okay. So there's, I guess in Red Sun Superman, that was my guess, is that there may have been something there that made him more predisposed. I haven't seen it yet. That is probably the big problem I have with the movie, is that where they leave off, you're left with the feeling that Jor-El, who is one of the most heroic people in Superman lore, he's the one who makes the decision, we need to get our son out of here before he dies with us. And Earth is, you know, he sends him to Earth because he knows he's got these supreme powers and that sort of thing. Now, is it unspoken that Jor-El figured his son would go there and subjugate the planet and rule over him? Maybe, but it was never explicitly stated like that.
Here's the problem. While we've been told by the government and people who not necessarily are capable of conscribing such things, and who knows, the engineer could have made it seem legit, this isn't necessarily legit.
Right.
Either.
And that's the second half. That's of the this big video, thing is
right?
The engineer
be the big thing. We're not done with Lex.
Sorry. The engineer. No. You nailed it. The engineer is the one who is able to repair the message, but it does not mean that Lex did not take that repaired message and altered it for his own edification and his own use. And you know, like my wife's adamant, she says, I guarantee you Lex altered that message to his own benefit because it served his agenda at the time, which was to turn the planet against Superman. So, I've never seen it portrayed that way. And did it bother me? Right. Absolutely. You know, because that's not the Jor-El that I know.
Because it was one of those things. I'm sitting there and I was watching, I was thinking back to the 78 version. And again, you know, we have the Brando delivery of the species saying things like, live as one of them, Kal-El, to discover where your strength and your power are needed, but always hold in your heart the pride of your special heritage. They can be a great people, Kal-El, if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way.
Yeah.
For this reason, above all, their capacity for good, I have sent them you, my only son. You can take that to mean a couple of different things.
You can.
Like, you can mean that to be an ideal for others to strive for. It could also be lead them and be, you know, and take over. It's just, it's interesting because it's a very interesting contrast.
Yeah.
And it's an intentional decision, right? Like, there's a reason that we're putting Clark into conflict about who his parents really are. And maybe that's something that we get explored down the road. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I just thought it was an interesting thing.
Isn't the other thing, too, that isn't necessarily something we've been used to, that we may or may not have seen before, Ultraman's supposed to be like his counterpart from another world, not a clone, right? I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, no. Patrick, or not, but that's another thing that honestly, like, I trust James Gunn enough that I thought it was brilliant, just like what we just talked about, I thought was brilliant. Like, I want to see his version. Like, if he's going to take the reins and do it, he's had enough experience, let's fucking go, right?
I'm not mad about it. It's just a very contrasting side of the Jor-El character that we've ever seen. You know, whether it be the Russell Crowe portrayal from Man of Steel to Brando's version from 78. It's not. I just thought it was a very interesting take because it's a very different take than what we're accustomed to as an audience.
When the mask came off for Ultraman, I thought it looked more like Anakin Skywalker than David Corn.
I thought it looked like Sebastian Stan a little bit.
He had the high ground. All right. Last little thing for me.
He had the high ground. I caught that.
One little thing that I think was my biggest complaint about The Force Awakens and J.J. Abrams was his fan service efforts, in my opinion, came at the expense of making a good movie. And if there's something I felt that James Gunn did very well, expertly even, his fan service moments within the film were interspersed in a way that didn't feel forced and didn't feel like I'm one of you. And probably no greater fan service moment for me came in seeing a monologue from a reporter played by Christopher Reeve's kid. That Will Reeve got a monologue was cool.
Yeah.
Dave, I mean, it goes without saying this is a nerd-approved show. This is a bandwagon-approved movie. Go see it. Go see it twice. See it two or three times. I think it's definitely worth a rewatch. But you got to start the conversation. I'm going to let you finish it, too. Your final thoughts on Superman before we wrap up today's podcast.
I really want to see what Ray thinks of this, because like my niece and nephew, like I told you, are not Superman fans. They thought the movie was excellent as well. They thought the first half was forgettable. The back half, they said, elevated this to an entirely different level. I can see that. I really want to see what Ray thinks of this thing and see if it sold him on it. But from my standpoint, you know, Superman's been my favorite since I was a kid. I'm very proud to be a Superman fan today. I think Gunn honored Superman tremendously. This felt like a comic book movie. This felt like the spirit of Superman in a comic book movie. There was a lot of All-Star Superman, especially the first post-credit scene is straight up the end of All-Star Superman, the cover of All-Star Superman, no less. There's just so much heart and soul in this movie that it is, you know, I mean, everybody's going to draw the comparison to Guardians, and I get that. I think this is a bigger achievement for Gunn than Guardians, because Guardians was an unknown property. So if it hit, it hit, and if it didn't, okay, no big deal. The fact that Guardians became the runaway hit that it was is a testament to Gunn as a director, but this was different. You're talking about the most well-known superhero of all time, and you're trying to build your franchise around that. And had this movie not only honor the legacy of Superman and be a great Superman movie, but to put the wheels in motion for what comes after that. He hit on every single thing. There's few things you can quibble about and say, well, it's not a perfect movie because of this, this, and this. And that's fine. But like I said, I go back for the reboot of the DC Universe. This is as good as you could get. And I think that's the greatest testament to it. Yeah, see it once, see it twice. It's everything you could have hoped for and more if you're a Superman fan. And if you're not, I really hope you watch this movie and maybe you learn to appreciate him a little bit more, because there's a lot about this movie that should make even the most jaded Superman skeptic rethink that a little bit and understand just what makes this guy so great.
Very well said. So there you have it, everyone. Superman, James Gunn's Superman, bandwagon approved. All right, let's head into our last little segment. Other than Superman, gentlemen, what you watching? Start with Tony today. What cooking show is on that we can watch this week?
I haven't watched shit this week. I just enough to watch all the fucking wrestling that led up to all the wrestling, and then watch Superman. I will say though, Mama Tony went to see Superman with me. She gave it a B. She said it was good. It wasn't great. I think for someone that's more of a sci-fi Star Trek fan, like if you want to talk Star Trek with somebody from beginning to now, there's someone to go to. But she enjoyed it, and she's in for Fantastic Four, so we'll report back on more Mama Tunney stuff. That's what she's been watching. I have been able to hit golf balls for the first time in 2 months, so I'm trying to celebrate that everywhere I can. It's the longest layoff I've ever had playing a sport in my 40 plus years of life. So it's been really difficult. And in true cooking form, which Patrick brought up, I found something at the grocer this morning, and it is a deviled egg based potato salad, and it's fucking stupid good. So if you like deviled eggs and potato salad, find a deviled egg potato salad in honor of Mephisto, Patrick. Sorry.
Just had to throw the M word in there.
for Ray, because he went and saw Superman, so good for him.
Good for him, indeed. For me, yeah, the only thing that stands out this week is I finally got and finished What If Season 3. And I liked it. The last episode, I'm not sure. That seemed to be, there was a little bit tough to swallow some of what was going on there at the very end of this whole thing. You know, just speak the oath and you're suddenly a fucking elemental watcher. Wait, what? How did that work exactly?
It's best if you don't think too much on it.
I'm trying not to. And I don't know if you guys watched What If as well, but I thought the third season was good. The last episode left me a little bit problematic, but other than that, it is a really good show. I mean, a big coup for Marvel Animation that really kind of draws them closer to kind of getting caught up with where DC is. But
hey, other than that, I'm looking forward to that Wakanda show, guys. Looking forward to that Wakanda show.
I think that's going to be the next big one. But other than that, I can't really recall too much of what I watched this week. It was mostly working, getting ready for Superman. I think I watched like Superman 78, went back and watched that, and nice. Timeless.
So I watched, obviously I saw Superman. Little O'Dowd also enjoyed it. He was on the fence about Superman, so he got to see it and embraced it. And so thumbs up to that. I finished season one of Murderbot on Apple TV Plus. Still highly recommend that you check that show out. It's very, very funny. Quick episodes, only about 30 minutes long, except for the season finale, based on a series of books. And I love where it ended and left off, and it has been approved for season two. So a second season with Alexander Skarsgård as a self-aware security robot is quite good, enjoyable. And I can't wait to see where they go with it for season two. Also have been watching Black Mirror. Black Mirror is the show that I kind of go to and from. As a fan of The Twilight Zone, it's a series very much in the vein of The Twilight Zone, but way more with a focus on technology and the twists within technology in the world. And one of the episodes that I just watched today that I really, really enjoyed is there is this future in society where the military, the people in the military are implanted with a computer that assists them in eradicating these people called roaches, and they look like these horrible evil creatures. And what you find out is the government is trying to eradicate them much more for more nefarious reasons, and that the computer program actually alters how soldiers see these people that they call roaches, so that they see them as less human. It's a very, very interesting show. They have episodes that hit or miss, but I'm in season three and they've hit really well. And then The Little O'Dowd, while watching trailers for in front of Superman, we got a trailer for Predator Badlands, and he looks over at me and he's like, "Dude, I want to watch all the Alien movies again." So he's like, "I've seen Alien and Aliens. What's next?" I was like, "Alien 3." I was like, "It's not very good, man." Mm-hmm. He's like, "I don't care. I want to see it." So we watched Alien 3 together yesterday, and Alien Resurrection is next on the docket as we're going to get through all the Alien movies.
What did he think of Alien 3? Did he agree with your assessment?
He gets really interested in the special effects and the quality of special effects and where they were then versus now. And so he was really less interested in the content of the flick as he was like just sort of how the movie was made. Like, I love that the thing that interests him seems to be how things work. And I just want him to explore that more. And so, like, he was talking about, you know, I'm sure that these were state of the art at the time, but the alien looked a little silly running through here and there. And I was like, dude, if you knew half the stories of what went wrong with making Alien 3, so much went wrong with making that movie. But yeah, so we're on board for Alien 4. And then I've got my ticket for Fantastic Four First Steps Friday, July 25th at 10 p.m. The Little O'Dowd and I are going to go see it late that night.
Wow.
Maybe do a pizza and dinner.
You need to start saving for film school, Patrick, because your son is going to make movies. You have bred him for that.
He's either going to make movies or video games.
My only problem with his movies is he has no Jedi-ish characters. You son of a biscuit.
He likes Stormtroopers, man.
I know. I'll still watch, though.
Going to be a bunch of R2-D2s running around.
I can't wait for the Little O'Dowd's movies at the end of the 2030s decade.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
I hope I'm still around to watch some of them. Or at least able to see or hear them.
If you're not, we'll have one that just says in memory of David Ungar.
Thank you.
You know,
I would appreciate that.
No, it'll be called Dadass.
All right,
Dadass.
Dad, in memory of Dad Ass. All right, let's get out of here on that note. Yes. Before we go, fellas, tell everybody where they can find you on the socials and on the Chairshot Radio Network. This week, let's start with David Ungar, Superman, Superfan.
Yeah, you can find me at Superman Forever. That's going to be my burner account for the next couple of weeks. It's right under Ray's Fern Gully Forever account. No, you can find me on X and Blue Sky at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, primarily on X, though. Facebook.com/Attitude of Aggression and at Attitude of Aggression, all one word, on Instagram and on Threads.
Easy, Sunny.
Aesop, DP, and the Dillinator all very much enjoyed Superman as well.
Aesop did too, huh?
Yeah, it was me, Aesop, my mom,
the Dillinator. If you get Aesop approved...
No, he had nothing to complain about, actually. He was like, it was pretty good. He's looking forward to what they're doing moving forward.
That's a big testament, because he's been very...
Like, the time of the movie as well was good for him. He didn't feel like it was too short or too long. Like, he enjoyed it, so...
He's been jaded against superhero stuff lately, so that's a big sell.
Hey, let PC Tunney finish here, all right? I know it was your show today, but like PC Tunney, you know,
it's fine. It's okay. No, it's okay. But you should listen to more Attitude of Aggression, where I interrupt Dave all the time. it's okay. We have a very symbiotic relationship of understanding of excitement when we start talking. So we like to kind of back and forth. But yeah, PC Tunney on X. I love this show today, you guys. Thank you both for creating this Bandwagon Nerds thing that is going to be very shortly 300 straight weeks in a row. 300 straight, like when it's August and it's Monday coming up, you're going to hear the 300 straight week in a row of Bandwagon Nerds. And that's pretty fucking awesome.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Tony.
Appreciate that.
I'll take partial credit also, for that.
I gave it to both of you. I said both of you.
He'll get annoyed, but make sure you also give a follow over to our good friend Ray Cash. It's Ray Cash, $HH over on the socials. You can follow me on the socials at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist. Catch me Mondays, Tuesdays, most Wednesdays, actually some Wednesdays. Mondays talking nerdy stuff with these guys here. Tuesdays talking sports, which, by the way, I'm going to say this one more time. You know, Tony talked about how proud how happy he was with this episode. And I 100% agree. This is a great episode today. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed our episode today, Dave, that we recorded of Four Corners Podcast. I had a lot of fun doing it. So please give that a listen as well. And then Wednesday, probably not this Wednesday, the little DeMarco is home from college. And they don't get a lot of time once you see them leave off for college. And so Greg had kind of set me up, but someday the Greg DeMarco show will return on Wednesdays. You just don't know when it is. Could be next Wednesday. Could be the Wednesday after. Who knows? I will be here next week for Bandwagon Nerds, though. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Now get yourself out of the basement. Get some yellow sun. Power up. And go see Superman either for the first time, second time, 10th time. It's a great, great film, and it deserves to be watched. You've been listening to Bandwagon Nerds here on the Chairshot Radio Network, part of the Chairshot.com.
How do you even know Superman anyway?
I just do.
So you know about the hypnoglasses?
Now she does.
Well, I'm not saying who he is, just that he wears hypnoglasses. They make his face terrific. How do they work? They make his face look different in your brain when he wears them so that you know who he is.
Yes, I know this.
So you know he's Clark Kent.
Why does he trust everyone?
He does it. Just us, because we are also of the cloth.
Of the cloth?
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.